cosas consideremos imposibles, mayores probabilidades tenemos de tener éxito. Yo creo que son frases que resumen muy bien esa trayectoria que he tratado de resumir, que es muy difícil de resumir, pero bueno. Y yo creo que ya lo más interesante es escucharle a él, así que ya.
Okay. Mina, thank you, gracias. Right, thank you very much. There were only about five people when I first came in. Can you hear me? Yeah, you can't understand. Can you? You hear me okay? Yes. What about understanding me? Okay. You okay? Because I don't speak Spanish. I thought there might be a translator, but we're going to challenge you to listen to me in English, so it won't be for very long. But if you can't understand anything, just say, look, I didn't get that, okay? And Christina will translate for you. Okay? Yeah. That okay?
Yes.
Good. If you don't understand what I'm saying, it won't be okay, because you won't hear it. Right, I hope you don't mind me doing something very informal, which is taking my jacket off, because it's very warm.
Yeah.
And I come from a country which is very cold. Well, certainly not as warm as this. Well, thank you for the introduction, Christina. I hope Christina said that she was one of my best ever PhD students. The second best. I never say who the best was to keep them thinking. She might have been the best, but... And my journal, the Journal of Advanced Nursing, is so difficult to get published in that even I get rejected in it, okay? My editors take great pleasure in rejecting my papers from my own journal because we go through a separate process. Right, well, thank you for inviting me, Mathilis. It's really good to be here. I've had an association with the University of Navarra since 1991 when I came on... you haven't just told them all this, have you? No. I came on an Erasmus or a Socrates exchange, and I came here. I used to have hair at that time, it was a different colour, very much younger. I think I only had four children at the time, and it was my first international work ever. The first time I'd ever taught in another country, the first time I'd ever worked with translators, with people who didn't speak my language, a different culture. First time, apart from military service, that I'd been away from my family for a long time. First time that I'd had a desk in another university. And it sort of kicked off my interest in international work. So I'm really grateful to the University of Navarra in Pamplona. And one thing I noticed, there are none here, but the first thing I noticed when I arrived to teach on a huge class of about 200 nurses, please come in. Some of you might have been there. There were no men. And I noticed in the PowerPoints today there were men in the class, which is really good. So you have men coming through as well. So hopefully in future alumni events the men will be here as well. Right, as I say, I do hope that you can understand what I'm saying. Mercedes asked me to come up with a topic, so I decided to do keeping the science in nursing. And almost as soon as I decided that, I regretted it because it was quite difficult to address, as you'll see. But we'll, you know, so there's not one theme running through this, there's a few things. And I won't keep you more than 40 minutes or so. But just in case you don't know, that's where I come from. That's Hull, or Kingston upon Hull. That's the UK. Yeah, you know that. Yeah. That's Scotland. That's where I actually come from. That's why I sound like I do. I first met Christina there in Edinburgh when she was a master's student at the University of Edinburgh. And then we worked at Hull, and then I left and went to Sheffield, which is there, bigger than Hull, but it's not on the map. And we finished her PhD there, and now I went back to Hull again. So that's where I live, and I've been there for 17 years. What else can I tell you? That's my family. I thought I'd introduce them. I work in the Middle East a lot. I've got to emphasise I have one wife. So I'm showing you that for two reasons. One, I'm very proud of them. But two, that young lady and that young lady have both followed me into the profession. They're both nurses. And Hannah, who's the oldest, she's 32 now, she came to Pamplona with me when she was 8 years old. And then she came back twice after that to stay with her family. And then she came back in the final year of her diploma course to work in the critical care department with Carmen Asian. Yeah, Carmen, yeah. And it was so inspiring for her. This was about over 10 years ago. But she's now still in critical care, and she's going to qualify in about a month as an advanced nurse practitioner in critical care. And she's also an independent prescriber, non-medical prescriber. So she, her time in the University of Navarra, or the clinic, was absolutely pivotal. It just changed her life completely. So she's 32, and that's the youngest one, and she's 17. And four boys, four girls, as I say, one wife. And if you ever come to the University of Hull, that's our logo. It's sometimes the sun shines and sometimes it snows. And today the sun shined, and that day the sun was shining and the snow. That's our logo. And I worked just behind that wall. Right. So when we think about science, we think about men in white coats, or women as well, looking down microscopes. Science and nursing are a strange combination, I always think. And I really took the opportunity to try and explore what I thought science, or how science and nursing were related. It took me along a few different roads, as you'll see. I'm going to come back to that diagram later. I'm showing you that just to plant something in your mind about science and nursing. People really don't appreciate what science is and what it can show us and what evidence is. And this is Hong Kong. It's a black and white picture, but it's taken in 2003 during the SARS epidemic. But I'll come back to that later. I just thought I'd put it up just now. People wearing face masks. So I had a look around the literature to see what there was about science and nursing, and there is a journal called Nursing Science Quarterly. That's the only journal that purports to be about science and nursing. However, it's not I always record my talks for podcasts, but I can say factually that the Nursing Science Quarterly journal was moved off the Thomson Reuters Impact Factor list, the sort of league table of journals, or too much self-citation, so it's not a very reliable source about science and nursing. But that's the only organ I could find that published at all around science and nursing. So I thought, well, you know, when we talk about science, nursing and science, are we talking about a science being in nursing or a science of nursing? And I'm going to address the second point first, and then the first point second, as it were, because I think it's something that I wasn't very sure about, and we need to be clear about. So, which is it? Are we talking about one or the other, or are we talking about both of them? So, science of nursing. What's it led to? Now, I'm being a little bit deliberately sarcastic about science and nursing. I've got some not very positive views about how it's been presented, but thinking about science of nursing, I'm just wondering where it's taken us. Where's the science of nursing taken us? And there's a lot of talk, especially in the United States, about a science of nursing. There are conferences around science of nursing. There's an advancing science of nursing annual conference, and it's brought us lots of theories and models of nursing. These abound. I'm sure that you know, I'm sure in your time at the University of Navarra you learned something about theories and models. It's led to proliferation, it's led to lots and lots of different theories and models. I'm not going to review them all, but there are many, many theories of nursing. It's led to curricula, which I think have been hijacked. You know what hijack means? Somebody takes something over. When an aeroplane gets hijacked, a terrorist takes the aeroplane over. The theories and models have hijacked the way that we teach nursing students in many places, and still do. I think in the UK it's less prominent now, but when I travel to other countries, especially in the Middle East, I still see curricula based around models that we stopped thinking about a long time ago. So models have sort of spread out across the world, and they're still there. I'll be honest with you, I doubt their value very much. It led to lots of publications, not by me, because I'm not a nursing theorist, but there's lots of publications out there about theories. It's led to a huge industry and people writing about them and trying to theorise about nursing. However, I think, and I would be glad over our tapas and a beer afterwards to argue with anybody about this. I don't think there's a great deal of evidence of efficacy or of effect that this has really done us any good. Some nursing theorists do try to defend the place of theory. I'm not against theory, but they try also to promote it as something that's done something good for nursing. I'm not entirely sure that it has. So, here are three wonderful ladies, all of whom I know, and all of whom I love and respect, but if they were sitting in the audience today, I would say exactly the same thing. I wouldn't change what I'm going to say. This is Calista Roy, of Roy's Model. I met her years ago in the States. This picture was taken 2 weeks ago, so Calista, who's very old, is still with us. Does anybody know who this is in the middle? It's Afaf Melis. Yeah, Afaf Melis from the University of Pennsylvania. Yes. I've been with her twice recently in the Middle East and in Taiwan this year. And it's really, I'd met her years ago, but it's the first time I'd got to know her. Sparkling company, wonderful lady. I absolutely adore her. She's great fun. And this, of course, is my namesake, Jean Watson, who I'm not related to Jean, and I've known Jean for over 20 years, but we often pretend that we're related. I call her Aunt Jean. And someone in Saudi Arabia a few weeks ago came up to me and congratulated me on my theory. And I said, that's really nice of you, but I don't have a theory. And she thought I was Jean, but not very flattering for Jean, but anyway, so I know them all very well, but you know, these are some of the leading nurse theorists. There are lots of other ones, and I've listened to them. I've certainly listened to Jean and Afaf speaking, and I do sometimes have difficulty following, and we have lots of conversations over drinks and dinner to try and sort these things out. But as I say, I've no personal animosity. I love these ladies, and I get on with them very well. And Afaf is on Twitter, and we tweet regularly. And Jean Watson had 1,000 followers on Facebook, and you can only have 1,000 followers on Facebook. And in order for me to follow her and for her to follow me, she actually dropped some followers. So it's very privileged. So Jean and I are on Facebook together. So I just want to make it clear, this is not an attack on them. However, when we look into the models in terms of a science of nursing, we see, you know, we see these incredible diagrams that just don't do anything very helpful. There's usually far too much in them. And there are some sort of, sorry, it's a little bit fuzzy, I know, but there are very useful things in it, whatever it means, human betterment. This is Roy's model, by the way. Martha Rogers' model, not one of the people I showed there, but you know, but things like connectedness, transformation, justice creating. This is a model of nursing. There's nothing there about making people better or any clinical work at all. They do seem to me to be very remote from what people do in everyday clinical practice. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're in clinical practice. You may walk into your clinical areas and have this uppermost in your mind, but I'm not sure many people do. This is Roy's model, represented always as a nice diagram. Some great things in there, you know. Assisting with basic needs, that makes a lot of sense, but I'm not exactly what initiation of faith, hope means, and practice of loving kindness, creating and healing environment. Lots of things there that can't really be measured or even tested in any way. So there's, you know, this, having this as a science of nursing, I think, is a little bit of an exaggeration. And of course, again, I wouldn't, you can hardly see it, I wouldn't bother with the details. This is Leininger's transcultural model of nursing, another very commonly applied, and it is used. It's used as a model of nursing, certainly in curricula in the States. And I'll be absolutely bluntly honest with you, I can't understand a single word of it. So, I'm just saying that I struggle with these models and theories a great deal because they're far too complicated, they're far too highfalutin, and I think they've led us into some problems. But as I say, I'm happy to be argued with. So it's led us to, I think, very bewildered students. I know students really struggle to learn about models, and they really wonder why on earth they have to do this. I hope I'm not putting this too. I think it's led to a lot of ridicule by non-nursing colleagues, especially by our medical colleagues who don't bother with any of this stuff, and also by people who are close to us, cognately, but who are much more experienced in theory. So I think it's at the extremes, it's led to some very negative views of nursing. However, I know it's all about trying to develop our own data, our own knowledge base, and develop our own research base, but I'll come back to that later. So I know that anybody who's wedded to theory in the room will be getting very upset by now. I'm sorry about that. Okay, so the problem with nursing theories is trying to demonstrate them. And I have listened to nursing theorists speaking about some of the work they've done, some of the research they've been involved in, some of the travels they've been on, and some of the dialogues that they've heard. They never have conversation, but dialogues. And, you know, they're trying to pin their theories, or they're trying to pin facts to their theories. The problem with this approach is it's a little bit like taking a gun and blasting it at a wall, and then say, in some, you know, if you look at that, you say, well, you didn't hit anything in particular. However, anybody can say, well, in fact, that was the target there, that's what I was aiming for, or that was the target there. You know, the problem is with this scattergun approach is when you have a theory in mind, when you go out looking for things, you're almost bound to find them, is my view. Again, I would love to argue and be refuted on that one. And there is some interesting other research connected to this, which is pretty new. This is a real experiment. This is called the POP experiment. Propensity to believe one's own philosophy. And it's a real study, and it was a simulated study where people were asked to listen to a series of facts and decide whether those facts adhere to a theory that they were told was their own, or one that they were told was somebody else's, or to a theory that they were told was, you know, to a set of beliefs that wasn't a theory at all. And the more facts they were given, the less likely they were to believe the theory. However, if people were told it was their own, this was a simulation, it wasn't a real theory. If they were told it was their own theory, they were significantly more likely to believe it. So what I'm saying is that when people have a theory, everything they see kind of fits within that theory, and that is one of the problems of having these theoretical outlooks on nursing. And I'm not sure that anybody has really investigated this propensity in nursing to believe people's own theories. Okay, that's enough of that. What about science in nursing? Has this helped us? And there is quite a bit about science in nursing, and I'm going to come back. I think we should keep science in nursing, but I think we're doing it wrongly. And I think that the pursuit of science in nursing has generally taken us to imported theories and models, proliferate hijacked curricula, lots of publications, exactly the same, and little evidence of efficacy. What we've tended to do, instead of developing our own theories as an alternative, is just find other theories and bring them in. I don't know about Spain. I can't comment. I do know a little bit about the States. I know a lot about the UK, and we've done an awful lot in the UK, especially in education, of importing theories into nursing, particularly into nursing education. And by the way, if anybody's interested enough in having the slides, I can send them to you afterwards, but you're welcome to take photographs of them. You know, so we've got Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This was the first theory I ever met in my whole life. I'd done a degree in biochemistry and 3 years of a PhD in biochemistry, and then I came into nursing, and within one day I'd met a theory called Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And it is just a theory. It makes sense, but there's no empirical evidence to support it whatsoever. It was just brought in as a way of organising the curriculum when I was studying. I don't know if it's even used these days, but I still hear people referring to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's sensible enough, but there's no evidence for it. So I managed to get through 7 years of science without ever encountering a theory of any kind. Bloom's taxonomy, we love triangles, If we can bring everything up to a point, we love them. Bloom's taxonomy, again, I don't know if you're familiar with that here. This is used to organise curricula in the UK. We seem to have to justify theoretically why we're teaching in a certain way. Again, I know from educational theorists and medical educators there really is no evidence that these theories have any real empirical bearing at all. And this is Kolb's reflective cycle. This is another one that guides lots of theories. Not just in nursing, it's used in business as well. You know, having experience reflecting abstracting and doing things and then going through and learning this way. Okay, we may well do these kinds of things, but I'm afraid to say that in nursing I've seen their evidence. We just bring them in uncritically and don't really ask if they are helping us at all. And again, you see them all over the place. And this is a proper attempt to have science in nursing. This is my last example. The so-called uncertainty principle. I don't know how many of you have got a science background like me, but the uncertainty principle, which is Schrodinger's uncertainty, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, has got nothing whatsoever to do with being uncertain about something. The uncertainty principle is the uncertainty about electrons being waves or being particles. However, in nursing, we like the sound of uncertainty principle, so it was brought in, and there's quite a period where publications would often mention the uncertainty principle and explaining it as a state of cognitive dissonance, which it isn't. It's got nothing to do with the uncertainty principle at all, but we like the sound of it. That was a very blatant example of people just picking something out of hard science, bringing it in by label into nursing without understanding what it even was. And I do know that has been criticised in publications. So that's just some of the things we've brought in with very little evidence of efficacy or very little justification for doing so. Then we have this has led to this other obsession in nursing of theory and practice, of closing the theory and practice gap. And it's something that I thought had gone away, and I keep thinking is going away, but it keeps coming back. And I keep encountering it as I move across the world to places that have kind of suffered from the American ideas, then the UK ideas, and they're still working through it. And I still see a great deal of talk about the theory. So getting theory into practice. We've got these theories. We must get them into practice, otherwise they're no good. In some ways I'd agree with that, but there's very little evidence that we're doing any of this. And people try to explain it in all sorts of ways. Well, okay, there's a gap, but really there's a synergy between them, so we draw complicated diagrams like that. Or we talk about closing the theory-practice gap, and we draw diagrams like this. Theory and practice, they're interplayed. Theory depends on practice, practice depends on theory. And again, I have, I can't think really of any examples, concrete examples of where this happens on a daily basis. Put that into Google Images and you'll get hundreds of pictures like this, theory into practice, arrows going everywhere. So we seem to want to close the theory-practice gap at all costs, and I think this has led us a long way down roads which have been very fruitless in terms of giving results which have helped patients lying in beds. I think this has been an obsession and an occupation which has been totally devoid from what goes on in clinical practice, and has really not guided much useful research, in my view. Again, you may beg to differ. I'm sure that Jean Watson, Afaf Malise, and Calista Roy certainly would. Finally, I'm going to get on to something positive in a minute. Finally, the search for the discipline of nursing. This is another thing that we talk about. It kind of creeps into the UK. Again, I'm not aware in Spain of whether it's used here or not as a concept, but in the United States, the discipline of nursing is mentioned all the time. And a discipline, if you look for definitions of disciplines, there are many definitions. Essentially, a group of people who think in the same way, have a similar method, and do things in the same way. That's a good enough definition at the top. I don't see any of these things being unique to nursing at all. That's just one example, by the way. There are lots of examples, but I don't see any of these things being unique to nursing. And I will, where I'm ambiguous about theory, about science and nursing, and the science of nursing, I'm looking for proof, I'd love to have it, I'm absolutely convinced that nursing isn't a discipline. And I don't, and I'm happy to be a nurse, I've never regretted being a nurse, but I don't think it's a discipline. I don't think that we really can identify something that is uniquely ours at the without being at the expense of doing proper research and looking after patients. We lie at the crossroads of medicine, biology, psychology, sociology. We borrow from all these methods unashamedly and quite rightly, because they got there before us and they developed methods. I think until we develop a research method that's uniquely nursing, and I don't think we can, but that's a challenge for the future, I don't see how we can describe ourselves as a discipline. Whereas, you know, medicine has a very definite disciplinary approach to doing things. Diagnosis, treatment, and then monitoring for a cure. That's the unique thing to medicine. We might say, well, nursing does that to some extent, but it's not unique because nursing does it. We had nursing diagnosis, North American nursing diagnosis, NANDA, for a while. Another load of nonsense, in my view, that distracted us from doing the real job of nursing. But I really don't think that nursing is a discipline. But this is something that I hope to write about, and I'll probably get heavily criticised for it, even tonight, you never know. And this is just, I looked for diagrams about disciplines, sorry, it's not very clear, but what I'm telling you, these are professions, humanities, social sciences, something else, and some natural sciences and formal sciences. Nursing isn't there as a discipline. Now, just because it's missing from that isn't proof that it's not a discipline, but I'm just saying it doesn't appear there. It comes very close to being lots of these things, but I don't think it's a discipline. Now, me arguing about that, you might say, well, that doesn't help anybody. That's another distraction from patient care. You know, my argument would be we should stop trying to look for a discipline. We should stop trying to justify ourselves as a discipline. Stop trying to be a separate science, because it's just a distraction from what we ought to be doing, researching into our own practice and doing things that help patients to get better. That's my view. So, what do we do instead? I mean, not everybody agrees with this. So what we do, and very much in the UK, spurred on by government policy and by educational theories and policies, we try to take shortcuts. And what I'm looking at is how do we try to get science into the nursing discipline, into the nursing curriculum, and into the discipline, sorry, I'm being hung by my own words, into the nursing curriculum. How do we do it? Well, we take shortcuts, and we try to impress students with ways of teaching and ways of thinking that simply do this to them, sends them to sleep. The classic, right at the top of the list, critical thinking. This is every time we do something, we talk about critical thinking. I don't know of any other subject that takes time out to do critical thinking other than nursing. I'm not mocking us. I'm not making fun of my own profession. I'm just saying this is what we do. And I know I've got two daughters who have been through the educational process of nursing, and I've got lots of students that I teach and meet with, formally and informally, and they just find this completely a turn off, you know. And we try to write examination questions which say you must, you know, critically analyse. If the word critically is in there, everything's okay. Evidence-based practice. This is another, I think, another of these sort of shortcuts. I'm not saying we shouldn't use evidence-based practice, but it's sold to students as a way of being good practitioners and getting round the need to teach them about research properly. Now, I could talk about that for a lot longer, but I won't. But in many ways, I see evidence-based practice and the way we teach students as being a shortcut. But what I also know about the way we teach students evidence-based practice, it does that to them as well. It just completely turns them off. They don't find it exciting at all. Because evidence-based practice doesn't train you to think. It's a recipe book. Critical thinking doesn't train you to think either. It's not about that, but evidence-based, it doesn't train you to think. It doesn't give you your own tools, essentially. Having said that, I'm very keen on evidence-based practice, but with people who understand what they're doing. And then we do things like we write books called Physiology for Nurses and Sociology for Nurses. Now, I'm guilty here because I've written two books called Physiology for, one called Anatomy and Physiology for Nurses and one called Physiology for Nursing Practice. But again, why do we do this? Why do we water things down for nurses? We immediately set ourselves aside. It's almost as if we can't quite take proper physiology or proper biochemistry or proper sociology. Okay, I'm being a little bit facetious or being a little bit sarcastic, I know. But again, why do we do this? Why don't we just send nurses to read the proper stuff? I've never quite understood that. And what I've found is that the nurses who I've taught who are willing to go and find the proper material and look at proper physiology textbooks and proper anatomy books and such like, they're the ones who understand the most, come out best, and I would imagine make the best nurses. So we're always trying to add water to the curriculum and make it a little bit more palatable. And I think it's a mistake. I think instead we should be teaching nurses about real science, and in order that they understand how the universe works and how to solve problems and what the big problems were that have been solved and how they were done. You know, these are the things that will inspire people. I don't think these things will put people to sleep, like I'm putting some of you to sleep. For instance, setting the. Don't answer this question just now, but, you know, asking nurses to sit there and think, you know, how do we know the Earth revolves around the Sun, for example? You know, how was that done? You know, if you go through the whole process that Galileo went through to prove this, it's absolutely fascinating. You know, you see the struggle, you know, the opposition he went through, you know, and against a belief system that just couldn't accept this, but he had the proof to show it. And I think that would, you know, I think that teaches nurses a lot more than teaching them about evidence-based practice. You might say it's got nothing to do with clinical practice, but, and you're right. You know, how do we know space is expanding? How do we know, you know, and much more closer to them, how do we actually know that the blood circulates around the body? We tell nurses this, but how do we actually know? It's a fascinating story of discovery, and in discovering that, you actually understand, you know, the way the venous system works in the body and the arterial system. How do we know that spontaneous generation doesn't take place? Okay, Florence Nightingale believed in spontaneous generation. She believed that infection, that rats grew in rubbish tips, you know, this kind of thing. She didn't realise that they went there because the rubbish was there. So her ideas on infection control were actually wrong, although she got some things right. You know, but if you understand that spontaneous generation doesn't take place, Louis Pasteur's experiments, you understand much more about infection control than just learning it through evidence-based practice, I think. How do we know that vitamin C prevents scurvy, the first ever randomised controlled trial? You know, we teach nurses, and I do this myself, I teach nurses about randomised controlled trials by telling them about randomisation, blinding, control. You know, but if you tell them how we know that vitamin C prevents scurvy, they immediately get it. You know, the ships that had limes and the ships that didn't on this particular fleet, the ones with limes, fresh limes, didn't get scurvy. The ones who didn't have the limes got scurvy. As simple as that. The first ever, not a true randomised controlled trial, the first ever experiment involving human beings. And how do we know that staff to patient ratios influence patient mortality? I'll come back to that point. Okay, that's close to home. How can we actually prove these things or show these things? We can't prove anything. And I think if we lead nurses through a process of properly thinking about science up to things that are solid facts about our profession, we not only make them better nurses, we make them better at negotiating with politicians who don't always want to have nurses or to pay for enough nurses. We're in that situation in the UK. So I've got an agenda here as well. So we need to teach them about, obviously we do need to teach them about science, there's no way around that. I think we do need to teach nurses about science. I think we do some of this. This is very standard stuff, you know. Science is the outcome of systematic inquiry. And that includes qualitative research. I'm not writing off qualitative research. By science I don't mean numbers, statistics. I mean anything that's done systematically that somebody else can come along and do again. I think we need to almost indoctrinate nurses into having this in their mind so that they don't run off with some of the stupid ideas that nurses and the general public sometimes run away with. As a scientist, you're completely indoctrinated into the ways of thinking of science. Otherwise, you don't get your degree. You can't possibly. You'd leave before the end. You have to agree with the scientific method. I think nurses should be clear on this as well, and on other things as well. So here's another of these. You know, another of these. We love these as well, don't we? But again, I'm not saying I've got problems with the hierarchy. It's called the pyramid of evidence, although that's only a triangle. There are some questions that could be raised about it, but I think what nurses need to understand, or our students need to understand before they come into practice, is why is that the hierarchy of evidence? You know, what lies behind it? Not that systematic reviews and meta-analysis are at the top and randomised controlled trials. Why? You know, why are these the things that are at the top? And why are they better than expert opinion, editorials and case series reports? And I think that's the thing that's often missing. You know, why is one thing better than another? Not just that it is. There are hundreds of versions of this pyramid of evidence. If you, again, go on Google Images, it's quite educational, and you'll see how many different ways people present things. You know, and we need nurses. I'm sorry if you understand this in the room, But I know that one of my daughters, who went through her whole undergraduate diploma and degree until she got to her master's degree, didn't understand how to read a forest plot, didn't understand what it was about, you know. And I think that we need nurses to understand things like forest plots. Why does this favour treatment and not treatment? Why are the bigger boxes? What do the lines mean? Why do some experiments not work? You know, why when we study things sometimes does it not work? So we need to, you know, and if they understand things like this, they will veer away from what I would call blatant nonsense, like chiropractors and things like this, you know, manipulation and thing. You know, there's no evidence base for this whatsoever, and the studies of it have not shown any consistent effect. A lot of studies in nursing haven't shown any effect either as well, but that again, they need to be able to sift through. So they need to know what things are nonsense and what things are not. Things like moxibustion, which is based on acupuncture, where you put a needle in and then you burn something, you know. I don't know if this is popular in Spain, but this stuff's coming into the UK, flooding in from the Far East. If it's from the Far East, it must be good. And the problem is that nurses are going along. Nurses are going and learning this stuff. Okay, they call it complementary therapies. It can't do any harm. It's got a placebo effect. Yeah, but it costs money. It takes up time. You know, do we really want to you know? Do we really want? You know, I think we need to give nurses the equipment to make their own minds up about these things, but they clearly haven't. Reiki therapy, you know, laying on of hands. Well, he's not even laying on of hands. He's holding hands above, looking for energy fields that don't exist. You know, this kind of thing. Lots of nurses getting into this as well. I'm on a mission here. You can see. I mean, I'm not very taken by complementary therapies, mainly because the evidence base isn't there. But I think we need to give nurses the equipment to know that the evidence base isn't there. It's all very well for them to say, well, it might come in due course, but we've got limited resources in our country. We can't be spending on this and homeopathy and things like that. Back to the face masks. Again, epidemics in the Far East and in the Middle East, MERS, SARS, H1N1, everybody runs and gets face masks on, you know, and then advice comes from the medical profession as well, and the nursing profession. Nurses running about with face masks in hospitals. Doctors not running about with face masks because it doesn't affect doctors somehow, only nurses. There's not a shred of evidence that face masks do any good whatsoever, you know. Just one of the things, you know, the general public doesn't seem to be interested in evidence. They just want to do something. Face masks are worse than nothing. But we don't really educate them on this. And in Hong Kong, millions of pounds were spent on face masks. I mean it, millions of pounds were spent on them. People, big piles of, you know, I go to people's houses in Hong Kong, huge piles of these things in the car just in case there's a flu or a cold. So we should be getting out there and saying, this is nonsense, just stop doing it. Okay, enough of that. We need, nurses need to understand regression towards the mean. I mean, they need to understand things like, someday an experiment will work, next day it won't work. That's just how life is. That's how God made us. That's how God made the world. But on balance, after long enough and rigorous enough trial, you will begin to see an effect. I think regression towards the mean is quite a complicated topic, in fact. It's more complicated than most people think. But I think it's one of these things, scientific things, that we should get right into nursing students' minds so that, they know how to evaluate evidence. Whatever you measure, it goes towards the mean. Batting averages of, you know, you can demonstrate these things in everyday life very easily. And if they understand regression to the mean, they'll understand forest plots, and they'll understand more about evidence than they will about us showing them hierarchies of evidence. Okay, so finally, where do we find the evidence? Well, clearly we need to look where the evidence is synthesized, and again, we need to be, with the proper equipment, we need to be pointing our nurses towards where to find evidence. And I'm not sure how much of this we do. They seem to be generally aware of evidence-based practice. Most of the students in my school have stopped in the corridor, could give you a perfect definition of evidence-based practice. The most judicial use of the best available evidence. Well, give me an example of evidence-based practice. I don't know, you know, they don't know. You know? So we need to look at databases like the Cochrane Collaboration. I'm sure you know about this. That's just where the forest plot comes from. You know, how many of us and how many of our students have gone onto the Cochrane Collaboration and put the word nursing in to find out how much evidence there is about nursing? There isn't a great deal, I have to say, you know, but there are some examples. There's examples about smoking cessation and things like that. I'm not going to go through the examples here. So, web pages easily available. Well, yeah, intervention in smoking cessation. There are a few things. I think it's quite salutary. I think it shows you how little evidence there actually is for many of the things that we still do. We need more. Sorry, small logo. University of York Centre for Refuse and Dissemination. Again, another of these evidence-based ones. Very, very rigorous. Slightly different methodology from Cochrane, but very useful. There's more stuff about nursing here. This is about maternity leaflets. There's a lot more here. They use slightly different criteria. Again, how many of us have gone onto these websites and looked for things to do with nursing? Well worth having a look. If nobody believes a word I say from today, but goes home and Googles these things, these are free. You know, these are in the public domain. Anybody can look at them. That's the good thing about them. And finally, the RN forecast study. And this is bringing us right back to evidence for nursing and proper science in nursing, the proper use of science. The RN forecast study, it may involve Spain, I'm not very sure. It involves 14 countries at the moment across Europe. Italy has just joined, and it's spread to the States. This is run by Linda Aiken, Walter Sermius, and a group of people in Belgium. But this is the huge study looking at patient mortality measured against staff-patient ratios and against the number of graduates in the nursing workforce. And I mean graduates as opposed to diploma-level nurses. So it's in the United States, it's in Europe, there's also an Italian leg as well. And in The Lancet, a couple of years ago, because I had the privilege of actually reviewing the paper in 2014, this paper, multi-author paper, Nurse Staffing and Education and Hospital Mortality in 9 European Countries, a retrospective observational study. This was where the study stood at that time. The countries have been added to it since then. They're continuing to add evidence. They had nearly 500,000 patient episodes, older patients in 300 hospitals undergoing common surgeries, and they looked at the effect of the nursing ratios and the education level of the nurses on mortality. A huge study. So they found that for every 10% increase in bachelor's degrees nurses, there was an associated decrease of mortality by 7%. Okay, forget all the statistics, okay? But that's what it showed. It showed the more graduate nurses that were present, the more people survived, the less failure to rescue took place. And it implies that patients, these are implications, these are percentages, not natural frequencies, be aware. You know, you can only base the economic cost on real numbers, but these are percentages. You know, 30% lower mortality, and if you've got more patients caring for, more nurses caring for fewer patients, and they're better educated. The effect doesn't last forever. It obviously tapers off. So, for nurse staffing per nurse, as that goes, as the patients per nurse goes down, that's your survival rate. That's real figures, okay? So the more nurses you have relative to patients, it can be demonstrated that more patients survive. One problem is it doesn't go down to zero, I have to say. The line is slightly exaggerated, but you've probably spotted that straight away. But the effect is real. But there's real numbers in there. And that's the effect of education levels. Higher percentage of bachelor's nurses, bachelor's prepared nurses, the less patient mortality you get. Simple as that. Why? We haven't got a clue. Presumably bachelor nurses are better than other ones, but these are the best educated nurses. I'm just involved in a study in Qatar just now where we've done a better study than this on the same phenomenon and showed the same thing. So that should be published fairly soon. So that's a 45 minute ramble through different aspects of science and nursing. I think that the RN forecast study is a sort of a clear example of proper use of science in nursing, scientific research, setting out with a clear objective, looking for evidence, having clear measurements, and having the ability to get the data and the determination to get it. So that's what I call science. So that's all I've got to say. You're welcome to email me afterwards, and you can ask me questions or tell me how wrong I am. That's all right. Follow me on Twitter if you're really interested. If you've really got nothing to do and can't sleep at night, that's a good thing to do. And that's my ORCID number. If you put that into Google, you'll find all my publications, grants, and all that kind of thing. Muchas gracias.